16, at least.
She breathed through her panic.
What if their words confuse me?
His voice was low.
I wish I could fight them alone, Katsa, and out of your hearing. But it would mean us separating, and right now there are soldiers on every side of us. I won't risk your being found when I'm not there.
Katsa snorted.
Nor will I allow you to fight 15 men alone.
We must kill as many of them as possible before they're close enough for conversation, and hope that once they're under attack they're not very talkative. Let's find a place to hide the girl. If they don't see her, they're less likely to speak of her.
They tucked the child behind rocks and weeds inside a niche at the base of a tree.
Don't make a sound, princess. And lend me your knife. I'll kill one of your father's men with it.
She took the knife from the girl's uncomprehending fingers.
Poe,
Katsa thought, her mind racing.
Give me the knives and the daggers. I'll kill on first sight.
Poe pulled two daggers from his belt and a knife from each boot and tossed them to her, one by one. She collected the blades together. He readied the bow and cocked an arrow. They crouched behind a rock and waited. But there wasn't long to wait. The men came through the trees, moving quickly on their horses, their eyes skimming the ground for tracks. Katsa counted 17 men.
I'll go right,
she thought grimly to Poe.
You go left.
And with that, she stood and hurled a knife, and another, and another. Poe's arrow flew, and he reached for another. Katsa's knives and daggers were embedded in the chests of 5 men, and Poe had killed 2 before the soldiers even comprehended the ambush. The bodies of the dead slumped from their horses to the ground, and the bodies of the living jumped after them, pulling swords from sheaths, yelling, screaming unintelligibly, a mindful one or two drawing arrows. Katsa ran toward the men. Poe continued shooting. The first came at her with wild eyes and a screeching mouth, swinging his sword so erratically that it was no trouble for Katsa to dodge the blade, kick another rushing man in the head, pull the first man's dagger from his belt, and stab them both in the neck. She kept the dagger, grabbed a sword, and came out swinging. She knocked another man's sword from his hands and ran hers through his stomach. She whirled on 2 men who came from behind and killed them both with her dagger while she fought off a 3rd with her sword. She hurled the dagger into the chest of a soldier on a horse who aimed an arrow at Poe. And suddenly, only 1 man was left, his breath ragged and his eyes wide with fear. That man backed away and began to run. In a flash, Katsa pulled a knife from another man's chest and ran after him. But then she heard the smooth release of an arrow, and the man cried out and fell and lay still. Katsa looked down at her blood-stained tunic and trousers. She wiped her face, and blood came off onto her sleeve. All around her lay murdered men, men who hadn't known any better, whose minds were no weaker than her own. Katsa was sick and discouraged, and furious with the king who'd made this bloodbath necessary.
Let's make sure they're dead, and get them on the horses. We must send them back to put Lek off our trail.
They were dead, every one of them. Katsa pulled arrows and blades from chests and backs and tried not to look at their faces. She cleaned the knives and daggers and handed them back to Poe. She carried Bitterblue's knife back to her and found the girl standing, arms crossed against the cold, eyes alert now, lucid. Katsa glanced down at her bloody clothing. She found herself hoping the child hadn't witnessed the massacre of men.
I feel warmer.
Good. How much of that fight did you see?
They didn't have much of a chance, did they?
It was her only answer.
Where are we going now?
I'm not sure. We need to find a safe place to hide, where we can eat and sleep. We need to talk about what happens next.
You'll have to kill the king if you ever want him to stop chasing us.
Katsa looked at this child who barely came up to her chest. Poe's sleeves hanging almost to the girl's knees, her eyes and her nose big under her hood, too big for her little face. Her voice a squeak, but a calmness in her manner of speaking, a certainty. as she recommended her father's murder. Chapter 25. They kept two horses for themselves. Bitterblue rode with Katza. They wound their way back to the stream to clean themselves of the blood of the soldiers. Then they turned west. They walked the horses through the stream, moving toward the mountains, until the land around them grew rocky enough to hide hoofprints. There, they struck out south along the base of the mountains and began their search for a suitable place to hide for the night, a place they could defend, a place far enough from Lek for safety, but not so far that they couldn't reach Lek to kill him. For, of course, Bitterblue was right. Lek had to die. Katza knew it, but she didn't like to think of it. For she was a killer, and the murder should be hers. But it was plain that Poe would have to be the one to do it. Poe kill a king, guarded by an army of soldiers, by himself, and without her help.
"You mustn't go near his castle,"
she thought to Poe as they rode.
"You'd never be able to get close enough to him. You're far too conspicuous. They would ambush you."
The horses picked their way through the rocks. Poe didn't acknowledge her thoughts, didn't even look at her, but she knew he'd heard.
"You'd do best to sneak up on him in the forest while he's searching for the child and shoot him, from as far away as possible."
Poe rode before them, his back straight, his arms steady, despite his tiredness and the cold and his lack of a coat.
"And then run away as fast as you can."
He slowed then and came beside them. He looked into her face, and something strong in his silver and gold eyes comforted and reassured her. Poe was neither weak nor defenseless. He had his grace and his strength. He reached for her hand. When she gave it to him, he kissed it. He rode ahead, and they continued on. Bitterblue sat quietly before her. She had stiffened when Poe came near, but if she thought their silent exchange odd, she said nothing. They came to a place where the land dropped away to the left and formed a deep gully with a lake that shone far below them. To the right, the path rose to a cliff that overhung the lake.
"If we cross over to the far side of that cliff and hide there, anyone coming after us will either have to cross the cliff as we did or climb up from the gully. They'll be easily seen."
"I had the same thought. Let's see what's there."
And so they climbed. The cliff path sloped rather unnervingly toward the drop, but it was a wide path, and the horses clung to its top edge. Pebbles slid from under their hooves and rolled down the slope, clattering over the edge and plummeting down into the lake. But the travelers were safe. On the far side, they found little more than rock and scrub and a few scraggly trees growing from crevices. A shallow, hard cave with its back to the gully and the cliff path seemed the best choice for their camp.
"It won't make for a soft bed, but it'll hide our fire. Are you hungry, cousin?"
The girl sat on a rock quietly, her hands gripping her knife. She hadn't complained of hunger, or of anything else for that matter. But now she watched with big eyes as Poe unwrapped what little food they had, some meat from the night before, and one small apple carried all the way from the inn at the Sunderin foot of the mountains. Bitterblue's eyes watched the food, and she barely seemed to be breathing. She was ravenous. Anyone could see that.
"When did you last eat?"
Poe asked as he set the food before her.
"Some berries this morning."
"And before that?"
Yesterday morning."
"Slowly,"
Poe said, as Bitterblue took the meat in her hands and tore a great piece off with her teeth.
"Slowly, or you'll be sick."
"I'll climb down to the gully and find us some meat. The sun will set soon. I'll take a knife, Poe, if you'll keep a lookout for me."
Poe slid a knife from his boot and tossed it to her.
"If you hear the sound of an owl hooting, run. Two hoots, run south. Three hoots, run back up here to the camp."
She nodded.
"Agreed."
"Try the rushes to the south of the lake, and pick up a few pebbles on your way down. I think I may have seen some quail."
Katza snorted but said nothing. She glanced at the girl, who saw only the food in her hands. Then she turned, worked her way around boulders, and began to forge a path down into the gully. When Katza returned to camp with a string full of quail, plucked and gutted, the sun was sinking behind the mountains. Poe was piling branches near the back of the cave. Bitterblue lay nearby, wrapped in a blanket.
I gather she hasn't slept much in the last few days.
She'll be all right now that her clothes are dry. We'll keep her warm and fed.
She's a calm little thing, isn't she? Small for 10 years old. She helped me gather wood until she was practically collapsing from exhaustion. I told her to sleep until we had more food. She's got her fingers wrapped around that knife, and she's still scared of me. I get the feeling she's not used to men showing her kindness.
Poe, I'm beginning to think I don't want to know what this is all about. I can make no sense of it. I can't factor your grandfather into it at all.
Poe shook his head and looked at the girl, who was huddled on the ground in her blankets and coats.
I'm not sure how much any of this has to do with sanity or sense, but we'll keep her safe, and we'll kill Lek. And eventually we'll learn whatever truth there is to know of it.
She'll make for an awfully young queen.
Yes, I've thought of that too, but there's no helping it.
They sat quietly and waited for the darkness that would mask the smoke of their fire. Poe pulled another shirt over the one he already wore. She watched his face, his familiar features, his eyes, which caught the pink light of the day's end. She bit her lip against her worry, for she knew it would not be helpful to him.
How will you do it?
As you said, most likely. We'll talk about it when Bitterblue wakes. I expect she'll be able to help.
Help to plot the murder of her father. Yes, she probably would help if she could, for such was the madness that rode the air of this kingdom as they sat in their rocky camp at the edge of the Monsian Mountains. The light of the fire, or its crackle, or the smell of the meat sizzling above it woke Bitterblue. She came to sit with them by the flames, her blanket around her shoulders, and her knife in hand.
I'll teach you how to use that knife,
Katza told her.
When you're feeling better. How to defend yourself, how to maim a man. We can use Poe as a model.
The child's eyes flicked to Katza's shyly, and then she looked into her lap.
Wonderful. It's quite boring, really, the way you beat me to death with your hands and feet, Katza. It'll be refreshing to have you coming at me with a knife.
Bitterblue glanced at Katza again.
Are you the better fighter?
Yes.
Far better. There's no comparison.
But Poe has other advantages. He's stronger. He sees better in the dark.
But in a fight, always bet on the lady, Bitterblue, even in the dark.
They sat quietly, waiting for the quail to roast. Bitterblue shivered and pulled her blanket more tightly around her shoulders.
I would like to have a grace that allowed me to protect myself.
Katza held her breath and forced herself to wait patiently and not ask questions. After a moment, Bitterblue said,
The king wants me.
What for?
Katza asked, because she could not prevent herself. Bitterblue didn't answer this. She bent her chin to her chest and brought her arms in close to her sides, making herself very small.
He has a grace. My mother told me so. She told me he can manipulate people's minds with his words, so that they believe whatever he says, even if they hear it from someone else's mouth, even if it's a rumor he started that spread far beyond him. His power weakens as it spreads, but it does not disappear.
She stared unhappily at the knife in her hands.
She told me he is the wrong kind of man to have been born with a grace like this. He makes toys of small and weak people. He likes to cause pain.
Poe dropped his hand to Katza's thigh, which was the only thing that kept her from shooting to her feet with rage.
My mother has suspected all of this,
Bitterblue continued,
from time to time, ever since she first knew him. But he's always been able to confuse her into forgetting about it, until a few months back, when he began to take a particular interest in me.
She stopped speaking and took a few small breaths. Her eyes settled on Katz's, flickering with something uncomfortable.
I can't say what he wants me for exactly. He's always been fond of the company of girls. And he has some strange habits my mother and I came to understand. He cuts animals with knives. He tortures them and keeps them alive for a long time. Then he kills them.
She cleared her throat.
I don't think it's only animals he does this to.
Kindness to children and helpless creatures,
Katza thought, fighting back tears of fury. Her whole life she'd believed Lex's reputation for beneficence. Did he convince his victims, too, that he was doing them a kindness, even while he cut them with his knives?
He told my mother he wanted to start spending time with me alone. He said it was time he got to know his daughter better. He was so angry when she refused, he hit her. He tried to use his grace on me, tried to get me to go to his cages with him. But whenever I saw the bruises on my mother's face, I remembered the truth. It cleared my mind, just barely, enough that I knew to refuse.
Then Poe had been right. The deaths at Lex's court began to make even more sense to Katza. Lex probably arranged for many people to die, people whose use had become more trouble than it was worth, because he'd hurt them so grievously that they'd begun to comprehend the truth.
So then he kidnapped Grandfather, because he knew there was no one my mother loved more. He told my mother he was going to torture Grandfather, unless she agreed to hand me over. He told her he was going to bring him to Monsey and kill him in our sight. We hoped it was all just his usual lies. But then we got letters from Leonid and knew Grandfather was really missing.
Grandfather was neither tortured nor killed. He's safe now.
He could have just taken me,
Bitterblue said, her voice breaking with sudden shrillness.
He has an entire army that would never defy him, but he didn't. He has this sick patience. It didn't interest him to force us. He wanted to hear us say yes.
Because it was more satisfying to him that way,
Katza thought.
My mother barricaded us inside her rooms. The king ignored us for a while. He had food and drink brought to us, and water and fresh linen. But he would talk to us through the door sometimes. He would try to persuade my mother to send me out. He would confuse me sometimes. Sometimes he would confuse her. He would come up with the most convincing reasons why I should come out. And we had to keep reminding ourselves of the truth. It was very frightening.
A tear ran down her face now, and she kept talking, quickly, as if she could no longer contain her story.
He began to send animals into us. Mice all cut up, dogs and cats still alive, crying and bleeding. It was horrible. And then one day, the girl who brought our food had cuts on her face. 3 lines on each cheek, bleeding freely, and other injuries, too, that we couldn't see. She wasn't walking well. When we asked her what happened, she said she couldn't remember. She was a girl my age.
She stopped for a moment, choked with tears. She wiped her face on her shoulder.
That's when my mother decided we had to escape. We tied sheets and blankets together and dropped out through the windows. I thought I wouldn't be able to do it for fear, but my mother talked me through it all the way down.
She stared into the flames.
My mother killed a guard with a knife. We ran for the mountains. We hoped the king would assume we'd taken the port road to the sea. But on the second morning, we saw them coming after us across the fields. My mother twisted her ankle in some foxhole. She couldn't run. She sent me ahead to hide in the forest.
The girl breathed furiously, wiped her face again, clenched her hands into fists. Through some massive force of will, she stopped the fall of her tears. She grasped the knife that lay in her lap and spoke bitterly.
If I were trained in archery, or if I could use a knife, Perhaps I could have killed my father when this whole thing started.
By some accounts, it's too late. But I'll kill him tomorrow, before he does anything more.
Bitterblue's eyes darted to his.
Why you? Why not her, if she's the better fighter?
Lex Grace doesn't work on me. It works on Katsa. This we learned today when we met him in the fields. I must be the one to kill him, for he can't manipulate me or confuse me as he can Katsa.
He offered Bitterblue one of the quail, skewered on a stick. She took it and watched him closely.
It's true that His Grace lost some of its power over me when he hurt my mother. And it lost some of its power over my mother when he threatened me. But why does it not work on you?
I can't say. He's hurt a lot of people. There may be many for whom His Grace is weak, but none likely to admit it, for fear of his vengeance.
Bitterblue narrowed her eyes.
How did he hurt you?
He kidnapped my grandfather. He murdered my aunt before my eyes. He threatens my cousin.
Bitterblue seemed satisfied by this, or at least, she turned to her food and ate ravenously for a number of minutes. She glanced at him occasionally, at his hands as he tended the fire.
My mother wore a lot of rings like you. You look like my mother, excepting your eyes. And you sound like her when you talk.
She took a deep breath and stared at the food in her hands.
He'll be camping in the forest tonight, and he'll be looking for me again tomorrow. I don't know how you'll find him.
We found you, didn't we?
Her eyes flashed up into his, and then back to her food.
He'll have his personal guard with him. They are all graced. I'll tell you what you'll be facing.
It was a simple enough plan. Poe would set out early, before first light, with food, a horse, the bow, the quiver, one dagger, and two knives. He would work his way back into the forest and hide his horse. He would find the king, however long that took. He would come no closer to the king than the distance of the flight of an arrow. He would aim, and he would fire. He would ensure that the king was dead. And then he would run as fast as he could back to his horse and to the camp. A simple plan, and Katsa grew more and more uneasy as they talked it through, for both she and Poe knew that it would never play out so simply. The king had an inner guard, made up of 5 graced sword fighters. These men were little threat to Poe. They always stood beside the king, and Poe expected never to step within their range. It was the king's outer guard that Poe must be prepared to encounter. These were 10 men who would be positioned in a broad circle around Lek, some distance from him and from each other, but surrounding the king as he moved through the forest. They were all graced, some fighters, a couple crack shots with a bow, one graced with speed on foot, one enormously strong, one who climbed trees and jumped from branch to branch like a squirrel, one with extraordinary sight and hearing.
You will know that one by his red beard. But if you're close enough to see him, then he's most certainly spotted you already. Once you're spotted, they'll raise the alarm.
Poe, let me come with you as far as the outer circle. There are too many of them, and you may need help.
No.
I would only fight them and then leave.
No, Katsa.
You'll never—
Katsa!
His voice was sharp. She crossed her arms and glared into the fire. She took a breath and swallowed hard.
Very well. Go to sleep now, Poe, and I'll keep watch.
Poe nodded.
Wake me in a couple of hours and I'll take over.
No. You need your sleep if you're to do this thing. I'll keep watch tonight. I'm not tired, Poe,
she said as he started to protest.
You know I'm not. Let me do this.
And so Poe dropped off to sleep, huddled in a blanket beside Bitterblue. Katsa sat in the dark and went over the plan in her mind. If Poe didn't return to their camp above the gully by sunset, then Katsa and Bitterblue must flee without him. For if he didn't return, it might mean the king was not dead. If the king was not dead, then nothing would protect Bitterblue from him, except distance. Leave Poe behind, in this forest of soldiers. It was unimaginable to Katza, and as she sat on a rock in the cold and the dark, she wouldn't let herself think it. She watched for the slightest movement, listened for the smallest sound, and refused to think about all that could happen tomorrow in the forest. Chapter 26. Poe woke in the early morning cold and gathered his things together quietly. He pulled Katza close and held her against him.
"I'll come back,"
he said, and then he was gone. She sat guard, as she had done all night, and watched the path he had taken. She held her thoughts in check. She wore a ring on a string around her neck, a ring that Poe had given her before he'd climbed onto the back of his horse and clattered across the cliff path. It was cold against the skin of her breast, and she fingered it as she waited for the sun to rise. It was the ring with the engravings that matched the markings on his arms, the ring of Poe's castle and his princehood. If Poe didn't return today, then Katza must take Bitterblue south to the sea. She must arrange passage somehow on a ship to Leenid's western coast and Poe's castle. No Leenid would detain her or question her if she wore Poe's ring. They would know that she acted on Poe's instructions. They would welcome and assist her. And Bitterblue might be kept safe in Poe's castle while Katza thought and planned and waited to hear something of Poe. When light came and Bitterblue awoke, she and Katza led the horse down to the lake to drink and graze. They collected wood in case they stayed in this camp again that night. They ate winterberries from a clump of bushes beside the water. Katza caught and gutted fish for their dinner. When they climbed back up to the rock camp, the sun had not even topped the sky. Katza thought of doing some exercises or of teaching Bitterblue to use her knife, but she didn't want to attract attention with the noise it would make. Nor did she want to miss the slightest glimpse or sound of an approaching enemy, or of Poe. There was nothing to do but sit still and wait. Katz's muscles screamed their impatience. By early afternoon, she was pacing back and forth across the camp, utterly stir-crazy. She paced, fists clenched, and Bitterblue sat against the boulders in the sun, knife in hand, watching her.
"Aren't you tired? When did you last sleep?"
"I don't need as much sleep as other people."
Bitterblue's eyes followed her as she marched back and forth.
"I'm tired."
Katza stopped and crouched before the girl. She felt Bitterblue's hands and forehead.
"Are you cold or hot? Are you hungry?"
Bitterblue shook her head.
"I'm only tired."
And of course she was tired, her eyes big and her face tight. Any person in this situation would be tired.
"Sleep. It's safe for you to sleep, and it's best for you to keep up your strength."
Not that the child would need her strength for flight that night, for doubtless at any moment, Poe would come scrambling over the cliff path on his horse. The sun crawled behind the western mountaintops and turned their rocky camp orange, and still Poe did not come. Katz's mind was frozen into place. Surely he would materialize in the next few minutes. But just in case he did not, she woke Bitterblue. She pulled their belongings together and removed all trace of their fire. She scattered their firewood. She saddled the horse and strapped their bags to the fine Montsian saddle. Then she sat and stared at the cliff path that shone yellow and orange in the falling light. The sun was setting, and he hadn't come. She couldn't help the thought, then, that shouldered its way into her mind, that wouldn't be held back any longer, no matter how hard she pushed at it. Poe could be in the forest, injured. The king could be murdered, and all could be safe. And Poe could be somewhere needing her help, and she not able to give it because of the chance the king was alive. He could even be near, just beyond the cliff path, limping, stumbling toward them, needing her, and she, in a matter of minutes, mounting her horse and galloping it in the opposite direction. They would go then, because they must, but they would backtrack just a bit on the chance that he was near. Katza glanced quickly around the rock camp to be sure they'd left no sign of their presence.
"Well then, Princess, we'd better be going."
She avoided Bitterblue's eyes and lifted her into the saddle. She untied the horse's reins and handed them to the child. And that's when she heard the pebbles bouncing along the cliff path. She raced back to the path. The horse was coming across the ledge along the top of the cliff, stumbling across, its head hanging. Too close, just a little too close to the drop. And Poe lying on the horse's back, unmoving. And an arrow in his shoulder. His shirt soaked with blood. And how many arrows in the horse's neck and side she didn't try to count, for suddenly pebbles were spraying over the cliff edge. The horse was slipping, and the whole path was sliding under its panicked hooves. She screamed Poe's name inside her mind and ran. He raised his head, and his eyes flashed into hers. The horse shrieked and struggled madly for ground to stand on, but she couldn't reach him in time. Over the edge the horse tumbled, over the edge, and she screamed again, aloud this time, and he was gone below her, falling through the yellow light. The horse twisted and turned in the air. Poe smashed face first into the water, and the horse crashed in after him, and stones flew up helter-skelter from Katz's feet as she tore down the trail to the gully, feeling nothing as her shins bashed against rocks and branches whipped across her face. She knew only that Poe was in that water and that she must get him out. There was the barest ripple on the surface of the water to direct her dive. She threw her boots into the rushes and plunged. In the shock of the lake's icy water, she saw the place where mud and bubbles rose and where a great brown form sank and another, smaller form struggled. He struggled, which meant he was alive. She kicked closer and saw what he struggled with. His boot was caught in a stirrup. The stirrup buckled to the saddle and the horse sinking fast. His struggles were clumsy, and the water around his shoulder and his head flowed red with his blood. Katza grabbed his belt and felt around until she found a knife. She whipped the blade out and sawed at the stirrup. The leather broke, and the stirrup sank with the horse. Katza wrapped her arm around Poe and kicked fiercely upward. They burst to the surface. She lugged his dead weight to shore, for now he was unconscious. But as she pushed him into the rushes at the edge of the lake, he became suddenly, violently conscious. He gasped and coughed and vomited lake water over and over again. He wasn't going to drown then, but that didn't mean he wouldn't bleed to death.
"The other horse!"
Katza shouted to Bitterblue, who hovered anxiously nearby.
"The horse has the medicines!"
she shouted, and the girl slipped and scrambled back up to the camp. Katza dragged Poe up to dry ground and sat him there. The cold and the wet, that could also kill him. He must stop bleeding, and he must be warm and dry. Oh, how she wished for Raffin at this moment.
"Poe! Poe, what happened?"
No response.
"Poe! Poe!"
His eyes flashed open, but they were vague, unfocused. He didn't see her. He vomited.
"All right. You sit still. This is going to hurt,"
she said. But when she pulled the arrow from his shoulder, he didn't even seem to notice. His arms flopped lifelessly as she peeled his shirts from his back, and he vomited again. Bitterblue came clattering down the trail with the horse.
"I need your help,"
Katza said, and for a good while Bitterblue was Katza's assistant, tearing open bags to find clothing that could be used to dry him or stanch his bleeding, rifling through the medicines for the ointment that cleaned wounds, soaking bloody cloths in the lake.
"Can you hear me, Poe?"
Katza asked as she tore a shirt to make a bandage.
"Can you hear me? What happened with the king?"
He looked up at her dimly as she bandaged his shoulder.
"Poe,"
she said, over and over.
"The king! You must tell me if the king is alive!"
But he was useless and senseless. no better than unconscious. She peeled off his boots and his trousers and dried him as best she could. She dressed him in new trousers and rubbed his arms and legs to warm them. She took his coat back from Bitterblue, pulled it over his head, and pushed his rubbery arms through the sleeves. He vomited again. It was the force of his head hitting the water. This Katza knew, that a man vomited if struck hard enough in the head, that he became forgetful and confused. His head would clear in time, but they didn't have time, not if the king was alive. And so she knelt before him and grasped his chin. She ignored his wincing, pained eyes. She thought into his mind.
Poe, I need to know if the king is alive. I am not going to stop bothering you until you tell me if the king is alive.
He looked at her then, rubbed his eyes, and squinted at her hard.
The king. The king. My arrow. The king is alive.
Katza's heart sank. For now they must flee, all three of them, with Poe in this state and with only one horse. In the dark and the cold, with little food, and without Poe's grace to warn them of their pursuers. Her grace would have to serve. She handed Poe her flask.
Drink this, all of it. Bitterblue, help me pull these wet things together. It's a good thing you slept today, for I need you to be strong tonight.
Poe seemed to understand when it was time for him to mount the horse. He didn't contribute to the effort, but he didn't fight it either. Both Katza and Bitterblue pushed him up into the saddle with all their might, and though he almost pitched headlong over the animal and fell to the ground on the other side, some unfocused understanding caused him to grasp Katza's arm and steady himself.
You behind him,
Katza said to Bitterblue.
So that you can see him. Pinch him if he starts to fall off, and call me if you need help. The horse will be moving quickly. As quickly as I can run.
Chapter 27. In the dark on the side of a mountain, no one can move quickly who doesn't have some particular grace to do so. They moved, and Katza did not break her ankles stepping blindly before the horse, as others would have. But they didn't move quickly. Katza barely breathed, so hard was she listening behind them. Their pursuers would be on horseback, and there would be many of them, and they would carry torches. If Lek had sent a party in the right direction, then there would be little to stop them from succeeding in their search. Katza was doubtful that even on flat land they could have moved much faster, so unwell was Poe. He clung to the horse's mane, eyes closed, concentrating fiercely on not falling off. He winced at every movement, and he was still bleeding.
Let me tie you to the horse,
Katza said to him once when she'd stopped at a stream to fill the flasks.
Then you'd be able to rest.
He took a moment to process her words. He hunched forward and sighed into the horse's mane.
I don't want to rest. I want to be able to tell you if he's coming.
So they weren't completely without his grace. But he was completely without his reason to make such a comment while Bitterblue sat directly behind him, quiet, intent, and missing nothing of what was said.
Careful,
she thought to him.
Bitterblue.
I'll tie you both to the horse, and then each of you can choose whether or not to rest.
Rest,
she thought to him, as she wound a rope around his legs.
You're no good to us if you bleed to death.
I'll not bleed to death,
he said aloud, and Katza avoided Bitterblue's eyes, determining not to talk to Poe inside her mind again until his reason had returned. They continued south slowly. Katza tripped and stumbled over rocks and over the roots of stubborn mountain trees that clung to cracks in the earth. As the night wore on, her stumbling increased, and it occurred to her that she was tired. She sent her mind back along the past few nights and counted. It was her second night without sleep, and the night before that they'd slept only a few hours. She would have to sleep then, sometime soon. But for now, she wouldn't think of it. There was no use considering the impossible. Several hours before dawn, she began to think of the fish she had caught earlier, the fish scaled and gutted and wrapped and bound with the bags to the horse. Once light came, they wouldn't be able to risk even the smallest fire. They'd eaten very little that day, and they had very little food for the next. If they stopped now for just a few minutes, she could cook the fish. She wouldn't have to think of food again until the next nightfall. But even this was risky, for the light of a fire could attract attention in this darkness. Poe whispered her name then, and she stopped the horse and walked back to him.
"There's a cave, a few steps to the southeast."
His hand swayed in the air and then rested on her shoulder.
"Stay here beside me. I'll lead us there."
He directed her footsteps over stones and around boulders. If she'd been less tired, Katza would have taken a moment to appreciate the clarity with which his grace showed him the landscape. But now they were at the entrance to Poe's cave, and there was too much else to consume her mind. She must wake Bitterblue, untie her, and help her down. She must get Poe from the horse and onto the ground. She must find wood to build a fire, then get the fish cooking. She must dress Poe's shoulder again, because it still bled freely no matter how tightly she bound it.
"Sleep while the fish cooks,"
he said, as she wound clean strips of cloth around his arm and chest to stanch the flow of blood.
"Katza, get some sleep. I'll wake you if we need you."
"You're the one who needs sleep."
He caught her arm then as she knelt before him.
"Katza, sleep for a quarter of an hour. No one is near. You won't get another chance to sleep tonight."
She sat on her heels and looked at him, shirtless, colorless, squinting from pain, bruises darkening his face. He dropped her arm and sighed.
"I'm dizzy. I'm sure I look like death, Katza, but I'm not going to bleed to death, and I'm not going to die of dizziness. Sleep for a few minutes."
Bitterblue came forward.
"He's right. You should sleep. I'll take care of him."
She picked up his coat and helped him into it, moving his bandaged shoulder gently, carefully. Surely, Katza thought, they could manage without her for a few minutes. Surely they would all do better if she got some small sleep. So she lay down before the fire and instructed herself to sleep for only a quarter of an hour. When she woke, Poe and Bitterblue had barely moved. She felt better. They ate quietly and fast. Poe leaned back against the cave wall, eyes closed. He claimed to have little appetite, but Katza had no sympathy. She sat before him and fed him pieces of fish until she was satisfied that he'd eaten enough. Katza was suffocating the fire with her boots, and Bitterblue was binding together the remaining fish when he spoke.
"It's good you weren't there, Katza. For today I listened to Lek prattle on for hours about his love for his kidnapped daughter, about how his heart would be broken until he found her."
Katza went to sit before him. Bitterblue shuffled closer so that she could hear his whispered words.
"I got through the outer guard easily. I came within sight of him, finally, in the early afternoon. His inner guard surrounded him so closely that I couldn't get a shot at him. I waited forever. I followed them. They never once heard me, but they never once moved away from the king."
"He was expecting you. They were there for you."
He nodded, then winced.
"Tell us later, Poe. Rest for now."
"It's a short story. I finally decided my only option was to take out one of his guards. So I shot one. But the instant he fell, of course, the king jumped for cover. I shot again, and my arrow grazed Lek's neck, but only barely. It was a job meant for you, Katza. You'd have hit him squarely. I couldn't do it."
"Well, I would never have found him in the first place. And even if I had, I would never have killed him. You know that. It was a job meant for neither of us."
"After that, of course, his inner guard was after me. And then his outer guard. And his soldiers, too, once they'd heard the alarm. It was a bloodbath. I must have killed a dozen men. It was all I could do to get away. And then I rode north, to throw them off the track.
He stopped for a moment and closed his eyes, then opened them again. He squinted at Katza.
Lek has a bowman who's nearly as good as you, Katza. You saw what he did to the horse.
And he would have done the same to you,
she thought to him,
if it weren't for your newfound ability to sense arrows as they fly toward you.
He smiled, ever so slightly. Then he squinted at Bitterblue.
You've begun to trust me.
You tried to kill the king,
Bitterblue said simply.
All right. Enough talking.
She returned to the fire and smothered it. They pushed Poe up into the saddle again, and again she tied her charges to the horse. And in her mind, over and over, she warned Poe, implored Poe, to stop announcing aloud every little thing his grace revealed to him. In the light of day, they moved faster, but the movement was hard on Poe. He didn't complain once about the bouncing of the horse, but his breath was short and his eyes flashed with a kind of wildness, and Katza could recognize pain as easily as she recognized fear. She saw the pain in his face and in the tightness of the muscles of his arms and his neck whenever she dressed his shoulder.
Which hurts more?
She asked him in the early morning.
Your shoulder or your head?
My head.
A person with an aching head shouldn't be riding an animal whose every step reverberated like an axe to his skull, but walking was out of the question. He had no balance. He was forever dizzy and nauseated. He was forever rubbing his eyes. They bothered him. At least the bleeding of his shoulder had slowed to a dribble, and talking no longer confused him. He seemed to remember finally to hide his grace from his cousin.
We're not moving fast enough,
he said several times that day. Katza, too, chafed at their pace. But until his head improved, she wasn't going to run the horse over the rocky hills. Bitterblue was more of a help than Katza could have hoped. She seemed to consider Poe her special charge. Whenever they stopped, she helped him settle onto a rock. She brought him food and water. If Katza stepped away for a minute to chase a rabbit, when she returned, Bitterblue was cleaning Poe's shoulder and wrapping it in clean bandages. Katza became accustomed to the sight of Poe swaying above his little cousin, his hand resting on her shoulder. By the time the sun began to set, Katza felt the fatigue of the last few days and the last few sleepless nights. Poe and Bitterblue were asleep on the horse's back. Perhaps if Poe rested now, he would be able to stand some sort of watch later and give her some few hours' sleep. The horse, too, needed rest. They couldn't stop for the whole night, not when they traveled at this pace. But a few hours' rest might be possible. When he woke again in the moon's pale light, he called her back to him. He helped her find a hollow in a ring of rocks that would hide the light of a fire.
We're not moving fast enough,
he said again, and she shrugged, for there was little to be done about it. She woke Bitterblue, untied her, and slid her down from the horse. Poe slid himself down, carefully.
Katza, come here, my Katza.
He reached for her, and she came to him. He wrapped his arms around her, his hurt shoulder slow and stiff, but his unhurt arm strong and warm. He held her tight, and she held him steady. She rested her face in the hollow of his neck, and a great sigh rose within her. She was so tired, and he was so unwell. They weren't moving fast enough, but at least they could stand with their arms around each other, and she could feel his warmth against her face.
There's something we need to do, and you're not going to like it.
What is it?
She murmured into his neck.
We...
He took a breath and stopped.
You need to leave me behind.
What?
She pulled away from him. He swayed but grabbed at the horse to steady himself. She glared at him and then stormed after Bitterblue, who was collecting branches for the fire. Let him cope for himself. Let him make his own way to the campfire if he was going to make such absurd statements. But he didn't move. He just stood beside the horse, his arm clutching the animal's back, waiting for someone to help him, and tears rose to her eyes at the sight of Poe's helplessness. She went back to him.
"Forgive me, Poe."
She gave him her shoulder and led him across the rocky ground to the place where they would make their fire. She sat him down and crouched before him. She felt his face. His forehead burned. She listened to his breath and heard pain in its shortness.
"Katsa, look at me. I can't even walk. The most important thing right now is speed, and I'm holding you back. I'm no more than a burden."
"That's not true. We need your grace."
"I can tell you they're seeking you, and I can promise you they'll continue to seek you as long as you're in Monsi. I can tell you they're likely to find your trail, and I can tell you that once they do, the king will be on your heels. You don't need me with you to repeat that over and over."
"I need you to keep my mind straight."
"I can't keep your mind straight. The only way for you to keep your mind straight is to run from those who would confuse you. Running is the only hope for the child."
Bitterblue came beside them then, with an armload of sticks and branches.
"Thank you, princess,"
Katsa said to her.
"Here, bring the rabbit I caught. I'll build the fire."
She would think about the fire, and she would pay Poe no attention.
"If you left me behind, you could ride fast, faster than an army of soldiers."
Katsa ignored him. She piled twigs together and focused on the flame growing between her hands.
"He will catch up with us, Katsa, if we continue at this pace, and you won't be able to defend either of us from him."
Katsa added more twigs to her fire and blew on the flames gently. She piled sticks on top of the twigs.
"You have to leave me behind. You're risking Bitterblue's safety otherwise."
Katsa shot up to her feet, her fists angry and hard, suddenly beyond any pretense of calmness.
"And I'm risking yours if I leave you. I'm not going to leave you on this mountain to find your own food and build your own shelter and defend yourself when Lek comes along when you... You can't even walk, Poe. What are you going to do? Crawl away from his soldiers? Your head will feel better soon. You'll get your balance back and we'll move faster."
He squinted up at her then and sighed. He looked into his hands. He turned his rings around on his fingers.
"I won't get my balance back for some time, I think,"
he said, and something strange in his voice stopped her.
"What do you mean?"
"It doesn't matter, Katsa. Even if I woke up tomorrow completely healed, you'd have to leave me behind. We've only one horse. Unless you and Bitterblue ride the horse fast, you'll be overtaken."
"I'll not leave you behind."
"Katsa, this isn't about you or me. This is about Bitterblue."
She sat down suddenly, the strength knocked out of her legs. For it was about Bitterblue. They'd come all this way for Bitterblue, and she was Bitterblue's only hope. She swallowed. She made her face expressionless, for the child must not know how much it hurt her to rank Bitterblue's safety above Poe's. And then she knew suddenly that she was going to cry. She held her breath steady and didn't look at him.
"I'd thought to get a few hours of sleep."
"Yes, sleep for a bit, love."
She wished that his voice was not so soft and kind. She wrapped herself in a blanket and lay beside the fire with her back to him. She commanded herself to sleep. A tear trickled over the bridge of her nose and down into her ear, but she commanded herself again. She slept. When she woke, Bitterblue slept on the ground beside her. Poe sat on a rock before the crackling fire and looked into his hands. Katsa sat with him. The meat was cooked, and she ate it gratefully, for if she ate, she did not have to talk, and if she talked, she knew she would cry.
"We could get another horse,"
she finally managed to say. She stared at the fire, and tried not to look at the lights that glowed in his face.
Here, at the base of the mountains, Katza?
All right, then. There was no other horse.
Even if we could, it would be ages before I could ride fast enough. My head won't heal while I'm rattling around on a horse. It's best for me, too, Katza, if you leave me behind. I'll recover faster.
And how will you defend yourself? How will you eat?
I'll hide. We'll find a place early tomorrow for me to hide. Come, Katza. You know I hide better than anyone you've ever known or heard of.
She heard a smile in his voice.
Come, my wildcat. Come here.
There was no helping her tears, for they would leave Poe behind, to fend for himself and keep himself alive by hiding, though he couldn't even walk unassisted. She knelt before him, and he took her into the crook of his uninjured arm. She cried into his shoulder like a child, ashamed of herself, for it was only a parting, and Bitterblue had not wept like this even over a death.
Don't be ashamed. Your sadness is dear to me. Don't be frightened. I won't die, Katza. I won't die. And we'll meet again.
When Bitterblue woke, Katza was packing their belongings. Bitterblue watched Katza's face for a moment. Then she watched Poe, who stared into the fire.
We're leaving you, then,
she said to Poe. He looked up at the child and nodded.
Here?
No, cousin. When morning comes, we'll search for a hiding place.
Bitterblue kicked at the ground. She crossed her arms and considered Poe.
What will you do in your hiding place?
I'll hide and recover my strength.
And when you're strong again?
I'll join you in Leenid, or wherever you are, and we'll plan the death of King Lek.
The girl considered Poe for a moment longer. She nodded.
We'll look for you, cousin.
Katza glanced up to see the slightest smile on Poe's face at the child's words. Then Bitterblue turned away to help Katza with the medicines. The child's teeth chattered as she knelt beside Katza. She had no coat, and the blanket she wore as they traveled was threadbare. The girl carried their packages to the horse, brought water to Poe, and shivered. Why had Katza not saved the hides of the rabbits she'd killed? She would have to do something. She would have to find Bitterblue something warmer to wear. For this child's protection was her charge, and she must think of everything. Her care of Bitterblue must be worthy of Poe's sacrifice. Chapter 28. In the pink of dawn, they stumbled upon a small cabin with little to offer except its shell. An abandoned cabin, perhaps once the lair of some Mancian hermit. It stood in a hollow more grassy than rocky, with a tree or two and a patch of weeds that looked as if it might once have served as a garden. Broken shutters and a cold fireplace. A blanket of dust on the rough wooden floor, on the table and the bed. On the cabinet that leaned on three lopsided legs with its door hanging open crookedly.
This is where I'll hide.
This is a place to live, Poe. It's not a place to hide. It's far too obvious. No one will pass it without going inside.
But I could stay here, Katza, and hide someplace nearby if I hear them coming.
And what hiding place had he sensed nearby?
Poe?
I wonder if there's a pond anywhere near. Come with me, ladies. I'm sure I hear water running.
There was no sound of water that Katza could hear, which meant that Poe could hear none either. She sighed.
Yes, I think I hear it too.
They moved across the grasses behind the cabin. Poe leaned against Katza, and Bitterblue led the horse. Soon Katza actually did hear water, and when they topped a brownish rise and the grass gave way to boulders, she saw it. Three great streams clambered down from the rocks above, joined together, and poured over a ledge into a deep pool. Here and there at its edges the pool overflowed, and a number of streams trickled downward and eastward toward the Mansian forest.
Very well,
Katza thought to him.
And where's the hiding place?
There's a waterfall like this in the mountains near my brother Sky's castle. We were swimming one day, and we found a tunnel underwater that led to a cave.
Katza knew where this was going, and Bitterblue's puzzled look, no, it would be more accurate to call it her suspicious look, suggested that Poe had already said more than enough. Katza sat Poe down. She pulled off one of her boots.
If there's a hiding place in this pool, Poe, I'll find it for you.
She pulled off her other boot.
But just because a hiding place exists doesn't mean it'll do you any good. You can't get from the cabin to this pool on your own.
I can, to save my life.
What will you do? Crawl?
There's no shame in crawling when one can't walk, and swimming requires less balance.
She glared at him, and he looked calmly back, the slightest hint of amusement on his face. And why shouldn't he be amused? For she was about to plunge into near-freezing water to search for a tunnel that he already knew existed, and explore a cave of which he already knew the exact size, shape, and location.
I'm taking my clothes off. So look away, Lord Prince.
For she could at least spare her clothing. And if this entire episode was a performance for Bitterblue, then they might as well also pretend Poe was in no position to see her with her clothes off. Though Katza didn't suppose Bitterblue was any more fooled by that pretense than by the others. She stood beside the horse and kept her own counsel. And her eyes were big and childlike, but they were not unseeing. Katza sighed. She pulled off her coat.
Point me in the right direction, Poe.
She followed his gaze to the base of the waterfall. She threw her trousers onto the rocks beside her coat and boots. She clenched her teeth against the cold and stepped into the pool. Its bottom sloped steeply, and with a yelp she was submerged. She dived. The rocks of the pool floor shone green far below her, and silver fish flashed in the light. She was surprised by the depth of this water hole. She kicked toward the waterfall. Her vision was all but useless in the cascade of bubbles at its base, but she felt along the rocks with her hands and found, in the dark below the pouring water, a cavity that must be Poe's tunnel. She